No.
It's enough. Even torturing you is boring.
This is the small council.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Small Council Radio. So, for tonight, we are finally going to start talking about the top and bottom tactics cards of version 2021. This one's kind of been on the list to do for quite some time. We kind of, we pulled our list of topics and we're kind of mulling over what to kind of choose between, and this one just kind of seemed like the right time to throw it in there with all these new hero boxes coming out and then just how big the card pool is currently. So with that said, I want to introduce my co-host, Cyrus. Thank you for coming on. Think he might be having issues with his mic. While he is fixing that up, gonna just kind of do our shout-outs as usual while we're waiting. Again, this coming Saturday is the Indianapolis qualifier. If you can make it out to that one, Definitely worth the trip. I will be out there. I'm planning to be there all day Friday and then most of the day Saturday, pretty much until just after the tournament on Saturday. But if you can make it to that, that'd be awesome. I believe there's also another tournament happening that day as well. So if maybe that's a little too far of a drive for you, if you are closer to, and forgive me if I am wrong, let me just look on Facebook here. I want to say it's Tennessee is having a qualifier on the same day. got to find it. I was actually, when I saw that one, I got excited because, I was like, man, I could maybe go to another one. But then I noticed it was on the same day, unfortunately. But like I said, if you cannot make it to the Indianapolis one and that's a little closer or maybe like right in your backyard, definitely check out that event. I might not be able to find it, but either way, it shouldn't be too hard to find with a little, looking around, or the community is super great. You could probably just post and ask about it if you end up can't finding the details, but definitely check that out. As far as I'm aware, other than the last chance qualifier that is happening on the day before the national event at Gen Con, I believe it's a Thursday event, because I want to say Friday is the first day of the qualifier, or sorry, of the nationals, and then the top players will play on Saturday, if I'm not mistaken, making the last chance qualifier on Thursday. With that said, the Indianapolis and the Tennessee ones, I believe, are the last qualifiers you can find at outside of the Gen Con event. So definitely keep those in mind. Even if you're not really gunning to go to Gen Con for these events, they're still going to be a blast, so I highly recommend them. I believe we have Cyrus back. Let's see if we can test his mic out here.
Okay, you got me this time?
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
All right. No, I don't know what the heck happened. It's the exact same setup as the last time I was on here, but it just decided to have its own little possessed hissy fit. So, but we're back on.
Awesome. So with that said, we can kind of jump right into this one, but I think we'll save the best for last and start with the bottom. You know, I don't want to necessarily call it the best and the worst because you can always find some application for some of the bad or, you know, worst tactics cards. So
oh,
we'll just
I don't
call
know. Some
the
of
bottom.
These are pretty bad.
That's because you haven't played with them enough.
Oh, I've played with them.
So we'll start with the bottom of the barrel, we'll call it. And I'll start off with my list for the worst. Saying the worst, the bottom. And then once we get to the top five cards, we'll lead with your list for that one. So for me, the bottom was definitely a bit easier for me to filter and pick my five rather than the top cards. So for me, I would say I do apologize. I totally forgot to put them in an order. But for me, kind of just looking at them. So I would say probably the number one worst card for me, maybe it's just personally playing it too many times, but I would say the Threat Unseen. It's Holland Reed's card. Start of any turn, target one enemy combat unit. If there is an unengaged, friendly, Kranigman unit in long range of that enemy, but not in line of sight, the enemy becomes panicked and suffers a panic test. No modifiers outside of what you might be able to do outside of that test or outside of this card. But, yeah, so many things that require you to be able to trigger this card. Now, it's not impossible. I've triggered it a handful of times. But I think maybe once ever I've played this card and actually did some damage. Let's see here. Next up, I would say Relor's Wrath. When a friend, it's Axel Florence commander card. When a friendly NCU claims a zone, you replace that zone's effect with target one enemy combat unit. That enemy suffers one panic test with minus one to the roll for each enemy Relor unit in short range. On a failure, in addition to suffering the wounds, they also become vulnerable and weakened. Now, this card would not be nearly that bad, in my opinion, if it wasn't for the fact that you have to replace a zone to do it. A lot of these other cards that are similar to this have a much easier trigger. It's the fact that you have to replace a zone to do all of this. Because even if you replace arguably the worst zone in most people's opinion is the Crown, which already does a panic test. So essentially you're just potentially getting that zone already gives you a minus one. So you're going to have two Relor next to the unit to even make it a worse panic test. Now, granted, if they fail, they get vulnerable and weakened, but I don't know. It just seems quite a bit for replacing a zone. I apologize. I just scarfed down my food. Next up for me, I would say, is Loved by the Small Folk. It's a Loras Tyrell's commander tactics card. When an enemy is performing a melee attack before rolling attack dice, that enemy performs one morale test. On a failure, they become vulnerable and weaken. And if they're in short range of Loras, they get minus two to their roll. Now, most people kind of know Renly's side of things doesn't really have any good, consistent panic, like modifiers, panic tokens, all that stuff, unless, like, obviously you're getting panic tokens from some of the tactics cards, but you know, you're not like having all these ways to do the minus. So really you're only looking for this card if it's in short range of Loras, and even then, a minus two isn't something spectacular. And then even after they fail, they just get two tokens. Like, there's a lot of triggers, a lot of things happening just to give out two tokens, whereas I'm sure everyone's already, you know, known we've discussed at length all these other token generation things. So number three for me. And then the next two, you'll see all over the place, and that is Price of Failure and Sustained Assault. Now, I will add a caveat. In my opinion, one Sustained Assault, maybe two, are okay. And that's like Victarion Sustained Assault is okay. Maybe you could even say Barristan's. Because they're, if you target their unit, they can get that second trigger for the vulnerable. But like, let's just go with the Baratheon's stock deck Sustained Assault. So you're looking at, it's when a friendly unit is performing a melee attack before rolling attack dice. If this unit began the turn engaged with the defender, it rolls the highest attack die value. And if the defender has more remaining ranks, they become vulnerable. So two very conditional effects for just okay, requirements in order for just two decent effects. Like I said, the caveat is, like, because with Barristan, you can at least just have to start the turn engaged and then play it on Barristan and or Victarion to get that, to basically get both effects. And then next up, again, with the caveat, Price of Failure. When a friendly unit is performing an attack before attack dice are rolled, all attack dice automatically hit for this attack. For each roll that would have missed, the attacker suffers one wound. For this one, the only caveat I would say is this card is actually pretty decent if you're combining it with things like Fueled by Slaughter. For example, I believe Cotter Pike has Price of Failure, if I'm not mistaken. Alistair.
But he has Price of, well, he doesn't have Price of Failure. Alistair has it. The combo that I'm thinking of is Gregor with a Sander attachment.
Yes, Gregor with Sander, or even Balon comes with Fueled by Slaughter, and he has Price of Failure. So, you know, doing those wounds to yourself and then doing all those extra hits, dealing more damage, and then it feeds into your price or into your Fueled by Slaughter. And so really in that case, it's pretty decent. Otherwise, it's a hefty price because the card's effect doesn't mesh well with itself. So either you're charging, which you get rerolls, which case you're probably going to hit with most of them anyways, and is those extra couple hits worth you taking extra wounds? And then you ask yourself, if you aren't getting rerolls, then you're potentially doing all these extra automatic hits to take all these potential wounds. So really, this card is, it has potential with certain things like Fueled by Slaughter and whatnot. Maybe there's some other ones out there, but just at face value, this card is, in a lot of cases, just going to hurt you more than it's going to benefit you. So before we go on to your five, what do you think of my five? Are there any overlaps with yours?
So I was actually worried about that we might have some overlaps in this section of the show. Is actually going to be pretty short. We actually only have one overlap, and that's Price of Failure.
Nice.
And I have made my disdain for Price of Failure very well known on Discord. I hate Price of Failure. From my perspective, I just can't get past the mental block of you are trading hits on your opponent for wounds on yourself. It's just hard for me to get past that exchange when cards, like we might talk about later, the new Berserker tactics where you get to trade wounds for wounds, and you can even trade more wounds than the wounds that you end up taking yourself. In this situation, you're almost always going to take or you're always going to give less wounds than you take yourself by the use
yep.
of this card.
Now,
if you,
one
if you
thing,
have – oh, go ahead.
I was going to say one thing I wanted to add that I think would make this card a lot more fair and usable would change it to one of two things. I think either change would be fine, is either make it for every miss you take a hit or for every roll of a one you take a wound. So now there's still that downside to yourself, but you're not, like you were mentioning, you're not trading extra hits to extra wounds to yourself, but there is still some drawback to getting all these automatic hits.
Right. Unless you are dealing a death blow to a unit, this card is one of those cards that you play. Or it's not. It's one of the very few cards that you play and you say, man, I hope this card doesn't do anything. Because what you're hoping for is you make all your hits and you don't even need the card. But then the card is there that's going to deal you wounds for additional hits that you do to your opponent. And if they have a decent armor save, they might not even take any more additional hits from those extra hits. So it's a very frustrating card for me. For me, when I look at it, I wish that there was a conditional effect that if you were attacking with a certain type of unit, let's say we use Gregor as an example. If you're attacking with a Clegane unit, you take hits instead of wounds. You know, or if you meet some
yep.
other type of condition where you can actually save yourself from taking wounds if you meet that condition rather than just being wounds all the time. But yeah, for me, Price of Failure, oh, it has always been at the top of my list of most hated cards. And I really, I struggled with running Gregor for a while, not just solely because of that card. It's mostly because playing aggressively is very rarely rewarded in this game. But yeah, Price of Failure, it turns me off every time I see it.
I was going to say, now, is there any cards of my five, or I should say of the four, since Price of Failure is an overlap, are that you're surprised about, or do you kind of at least see what I'm getting at with the other four?
I see some of it. I'm actually kind of surprised by Threat Unseen. Mostly what I get from that is there's just too many conditions to it. Like you had yourself a nice laundry list of conditions that you need to meet before you even get to pull off the card. But
yeah.
the effect itself and the versatility of it is pretty strong because it is a start of any turn effect. You can play it on your opponent's turn or yours. You can use it to set up a bigger attack by knocking them down. And it's units that are even more prone to panic damage, like conscripts or raiders, really don't want to see that card. So I can see where you're coming from on, gosh, you got to jump through hoops just to get this card to work. It wouldn't be on my worst ranked card list. But it is kind of annoying that you just have to meet all these conditions before you even get to play the darn thing.
All right, what are your thoughts on the other three? Let's see, we had the Small Folk, Rolor's Wrath, and Sustained Assault.
So yeah, Love by the Small Folk is a little iffy. They perform a morale test, and on a failure, they become vulnerable and weakened. That's not really impeding them too much. The weakened token is when they're making their attack, but it still requires them to fail a morale test, and there's a lot of units in the game that have really decent morale. So it's certainly possible for Love by the Small Folk to not even do anything at all, and you just hate it when that happens, especially on a commander card. And you only get six of them in your hand, and when a commander card comes up blank, you just feel like you're missing out on something that you maybe could have had with a different commander. Fortunately, Loris has another tactics card that is absolutely ridiculous that will probably appear in our best list. Rolor's Wrath, Yeah, I can see it there too. Again, it's that conditional aspect of it. It could be handy if there's zones on the board that that you're not really planning on using. And the tokens certainly do help, but like you said, it being a replace effect, you're not going to lead on the tactics board with this card. You're almost waiting until your opponent's, you know, kind of shown their hand as far as how they're planning on this round playing out, and you take a late tactic zone to see if you can get them to fail that panic test. And then a sustained assault, I get. Baratheons, I think, make the most use of any of the factions that have sustained assault, because they like to just stay in there and grind. And if they're going to start a lot of their attacks already engaged, and they don't mind sitting and swinging. So when you have a card that's very situationally niche to where only a single faction can make a whole lot of good use out of it, then yeah, I can see why that would make the list.
All right, and I think that that's all five of mine. So how's your list looking?
All right, so fortunately enough, my five lowest ranked cards list was actually pretty short. It wasn't that difficult to pare it down. I had a lot of trouble trying to find my favorite top five cards. But like we said, our overlap here is Price of Failure. That's also on my list. And I'm also going to lead with Traitors, I Will Have Their Heads. Joffrey has always been a little iffy because of all of his drawbacks as far as his tactics cards go and his attachment. And the last version in 1.6 of Traitors, I Will Have Their Heads was actually really good because it was just to start a turn, take a panic test. I mean, that had no conditions. They just take a panic test. And now it is attach this card to a unit until the end of the round. And all friendly units that attack that unit gain vicious. And that's it. Oh, and by the way, it's only on melee attacks. Now, if it also included ranged attacks, it might have bumped up its versatility a little bit. Gaining vicious on Lannister crossbows right now would actually be pretty juicy. But the fact that most Lannister units already have vicious anyway, and then if you do not destroy that unit, all of your friendly units in short range become panicked and vulnerable. So there is a massive two-token downside if you don't kill the unit that you've attached the card to. Traitors, I Will Have Their Heads is an awful card. Absolutely terrible. It's really one that you see and you toss it and hope for a better card next round. I don't think that I have found that I have played a game with Joffrey since 2021 that I have had good use of Traitors, I Will Have Their Heads. It's really disappointing for me. Staying with Lannisters, I also have Lannister Pays His Debts. It might be one of the weakest comeback cards or on-death cards. It also, again, gives vicious, which just about every Lannister unit worth its salt already has vicious. So you're going to have very few units that you're going to be able to attach Traitors, I Will Have Their Heads to be able to get that bonus. And then on top of that, it has a conditional plus one to hit on your melee attacks if you own the crown. Now, Lannisters don't really get to play the activation games very much. I have found that the vast majority of my Lannister lists are four combat units and three NCUs. If you're losing one of those four combat units and your consolation is a Lannister Pays His Debts, you're feeling it. It's not worthwhile. It can have some benefit if you get plus one to hit on your Flayed Men or your Knights of Casterly Rock or your souped up Mountains Men or Pyromancers for that matter. There is a bonus, but the bonus is held, is hidden behind you must control the Crown Zone, which is iffy unless you're bringing the 5-point Joffrey now. So Traitor's Eye will have their heads. It's a bit tough for me, and that's why it ranks in my bottom five tactics cards. Moving on, this one I've been talking about for a while. It is Robb Stark's superior positioning. Now, you talk to a lot of players, even experienced Song of Ice and Fire players, and they'll tell you, I love Robb Stark. I think he's a great commander. I'm not sure what everybody is seeing. Robb Stark is actually rated as one of the worst Stark commanders right now. And his cards are part of the reason why. So he has a very weird version of hit and run where you have to start the turn engaged. I don't think any other hit and run has that requirement. But as far as superior positioning goes, it's when an enemy performs a charge action before resolving that action. If the unit is charging in the front, which is a condition that they have to be charging the front of a unit, they suffer a disorderly charge on distance rolls of 3 or less. And if they do suffer that disorderly charge, they become vulnerable. So it's really weird. There's a lot of charge distances that are like Hail Mary charges that you might be trying on a 4 or a 5 or a 6, and this card won't even come up in those situations. Because if they fail a charge, it's not a disorderly charge. It's a not successful charge. But with it only triggering on a 1, 2, or 3, that means that even if they're on auto in, it's a 50-50 whether this card works, which might be some of the worst odds of tactics cards in the game as far as control goes. I look at Counterplot, and it's a 66% chance. You look at some of the other control cards, and some of them don't even have odds of whether they're going to work or not. They just have some other condition like spend a token or take wounds or whatnot. But this one is solely reliant on your opponent's charge distance die to even work, and it's a coin toss. And in a game where a lot of things are already up to chance as far as hits, defense, panic dice, you don't really want to add more reliance on chance for you to try to win your game. So when I see a card like that, it's like, yeah, it's 50-50 whether it's even going to work. A commander card that is a coin toss of whether it's going to improve your odds of winning the game or not, it worries me. So it really sticks out that it makes my list of worst cards. So I think that's 3 for me that haven't overlapped. Let's go to another card that was better in a previous version that may have been too good, that got brought down probably too much. That's Our Blades Are Sharp. Our Blades Are Sharp is a Ramsey Commander card, and it was ridiculous in 1.5. I'm pretty sure, did it add like 2 attack dice and even more benefits on top of that? I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was the card that you definitely didn't want to see your opponent have. Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, I think it was +2 attack dice and like, it's either a keyword. It was either like critical blow or +1 to hit. It was a lot.
It was nuts. This version is not nuts. It is very meh. So when a unit is performing a melee attack before rolling attack dice, if the defender is panicked, this attack gains precision. That's its primary benefit. You get precision. If the defender is panicked and the attacker is a House Bolton unit, you get to get rerolls. Now, that's good if you're not getting a charge bonus and you need to get your rerolls back. But, you know, House Button Cultthroats have a way to get rerolls through their Ruthless Aggression ability. You have to have the defender panicked, which Ramsey can throw out panic tokens like it's nothing with Reek. Unless Reek dies, and he has died several times to the very first roll after he's handed out some panic tokens. But a unit to be conditionally panicked and you'd be attacking with a Bolton unit for precision and rerolls just doesn't rise to the expected power level to me of a commander card. That may be a little bit of bias, just remembering what Our Blades Are Sharp used to be. But even in the game today, precision's a fine keyword. It helps you get through armor. But unless you're stacking it with critical blow, it's just fine. It's not amazing. So because it's a commander card that just seems to be lacking some of that power level, that's why it made my list. And finally, I will be going to yet another card that was altered. This one a little bit more recently in Season 1. Serrated Enhancement for the Night's Watch Othel Yarwick, which I know our listeners are going to be like, oh no, cry me a river. Night's Watch tactics cards got nerfed. Yeah, it did, and I'm still sore about it, so sorry. What do you want me to do? So Othel Yarwick's tactics cards got knocked back quite a bit. They no longer attach, which is fine. That did bring Honed Enhancement more in line to what other cards can do. Plus one to hit, an extra attack die. There's several cards that are on that power level. But Serrated Enhancement, that one I think got hurt the most, because when you're attacking, before rolling attack dice, this attack gains vicious. It doesn't attack to give it vicious whenever it's attacking, just this one attack. And then if it's a builder unit and the enemy fails their panic test, they become weakened. That's kind of weak. The Night's Watch don't really play the panic game very well. They don't have a whole lot of ways to get vicious, which is one reason why you might look at this card and say, oh, yeah, that might actually be a benefit. But there's not really very many panic tokens to make you reroll that increased odds of failure on your panic test. And again, it's just for the one attack. It's a one-off. Now you do get two of the cards, obviously, but it's still just a one-off on the attack. It's just not, it doesn't rise to the power level that you would expect a commander card to have. So I think they might have overtuned this one just a little bit, or undertuned it. How would you describe that on a nerf? Do you overtune a nerf or do you undertune a nerf? I'm not sure. But that that covers my five cards, which I went ahead and did five in addition to the one that we overlapped on. So what do you think?
I think, let's see, so the first two, Traitors, right? That was the first one?
Yeah.
So that one actually was on, like, in my initial pool before I filtered them out. But the ultimate reason why I filtered this one out was more of a personal reason, and that's just because I take Joffrey with a grain of salt because of how he was designed, if that makes sense. Just like with, and I'm not saying that makes the card better. I'm just saying that it kind of skews the power level of all of his cards a little more goofy because of, you know, the Kingsguard being so cheap, but then he gives two extra points, and then each card has a benefit with a downside. So I felt like he was more of like a corner case commander, so I just kind of stayed away from his commander cards, if that made sense, in my bottom five, just to kind of take that whole corner case out of the equation. But I definitely can see, like I said, it was in my initial pool before I filtered it out, and I definitely see it, you know, it is definitely one of the weaker cards. You know, you get very little value unless you're going to kill that unit. So it does have some application, but it's almost like you know, it's that finisher card. Okay, so I know I'm going to attack this unit and they're going to die. Let's just make sure they die by giving my unit vicious and start a turn, play it, attack, they die. You don't have to worry about the downside. It doesn't conflict with like cards that when performing a melee attack, since you'll be able to do it at the start of the turn. But still, it's not like a benefit like of the effect that you're getting for a card that has a downside. You know, because you could take away the downside to this card, and in this faction, like you said, where most you know, when you're talking about Lannister pays his debts, most of the things already have vicious that you're running anyways. So this card, you literally could take away the downside and this card would just be decent. I can see that and I can kind of agree there. Lannister pays his debts. I see where you're coming from. This one I disagree a little bit, and I don't disagree in the sense that I think this card is some amazing card. I do agree still that it's probably one of the weaker or even, you know, the weakest card that attaches and then triggers when one of your units dies. But the plus one to hit is still pretty big. Like, if you're comparing them to the other similar cards, then yeah, it's pretty low, if not the bottom. But just in the sense of its effect, the plus one hit, but that's probably just my play style. I almost always build my Lannister list to have some form of ways to have the crown, whether that be Littlefinger, Joffrey, or like three NCUs to help me kind of get that the crown. So I almost like factor it into my brain that I'm going to have the plus one to hit almost all the time. And then I'm, you know, throwing it obviously on a unit that doesn't have vicious, but, you know, guardsmen, even with the, you know, the only their six attack dice become a decent threat, especially if you throw, I guess they don't give intimidating presence anymore. They give hold the line, don't they? But before, I guess, that change, you know, putting this on a guardsman so that they hit on threes with six dice, vicious, intimidating presence was, you know, pretty nasty. But let's see, what else did you have? I know you had the Our Blades Are Sharp. Yeah, I think this one is just lacking a little bit. I don't know if I would, I don't know if I would put it like super low. I was actually even more thinking his other card, Sadistic Games, was in my initial pool. And that's just because I can't tell you how many times me and my opponent have drawn this card so early that you can't even play it, because your opponent's just going to pick the engaged enemy part because no one's engaged yet. So I was a little surprised to see that Our Blades Are Sharp. But I do agree, like, having to have a panic token on the unit to even get either effect, I would almost think that the second part to get rerolls, just needing to be Bolton would be sufficient. You know, make the panicked, the precision if they're panicked. Because the nice part is you don't have to expend the panic, which you see in a lot of other commanders' cards, you know, expending tokens to get other effects. So, but the secondary needing to be, I mean, I guess if you're already panicked for the first part, you're going to be panicked for the second part, but it just seems like a weird caveat that you wouldn't be able to just play this card if they're not panicked and at least get the rerolls for a House Bolton unit. And then I remember The awful card. What was the other one, though? I think I'm missing
the superior positioning.
Oh, yep. That one was actually on my list as well in my initial pool before I filtered out. And I agree. It's, you know, you're already, you know, you mentioned 50%. Technically, that's not even I would say it's technically, you know, air quotations, correct, 50%. But it's more like 33%, because you already are disorderly on a 1. So that was already in the equation. So
yeah,
really,
that's a good point.
you're only adding the 2 and the 3. So now, granted, a disorderly can be devastating. Not being able to play taxed cards, not getting rerolls on your dice, and then in this case, you become vulnerable. But I don't know. Like you said, a lot of these really strong cards just happen. I would almost even say this card, take away the vulnerable part, and just literally says your opponent disorders, you know, is a disorderly.
Well, that's the crazy thing.
And
that's what he used to have. He used to have on his attachment. On his attachment, he had the order, enemies that charge this unit are automatically disordered. They took that away and put it on a card and made it 3 times worse.
Yeah, so I could definitely see this just being his old ability and just simply saying you're disordered. And that way, you know, I mean, it may seem strong because, yeah, you get no rerolls and you get to play no tax cards. But, I mean, if you did that, this card would not even grace the top 10, in my opinion, like, because we're going to be shortly talking about the top 5. So I think that would just be a nice, solid, strong effect for Rob and be very thematic for him. But as is, only adding – essentially a 33% to the already, I think it's like 16%, I don't know, that it was before at a 1 is, you know, and then becoming vulnerable doesn't really help you until you then attack them. So maybe if that was like a weakened token and if it was like 4 or less, but still, I would just rather it be the other way and just auto disordered and nothing else. Just you're disordered. And that in itself can be game changing because sometimes, you know, your opponent's charging in with some cool combo cards in their hand looking to like destroy you. And you go, okay, I'm going to soften that blow, you know, do your sudden retreat and, you know, pull off some cool, like maneuverable combos with Rob. But I don't know. So I definitely agree with that one. And then lastly, Othel with his serrated enhancement. Again, this one, I would say I would agree in the sense that I think this card is really low on the list. I don't know if it would be that close to my bottom, especially not like the bottom 5, but and that's only because of the potential I guess it has with Builder Crossbowman. Now, again, this would be like a very specific combo, but you run the Builder Crossbowman, and if they try charging you, you can shift towards them to get those rerolls if you can get within 6, and then play this card, get vicious, shoot them with a bunch of dice with Sundering and Vicious and rerolls. And then if they fail that panic, they're now weakened as they charge into you. And then you can, like, use the maneuver or something to get out. Or, you know, there's some potential there. But, this being a one-time thing, giving you arguably the worst keyword in the game, and then a situational second effect, I can definitely see where you're coming from. I think that was all of them, right?
Yeah, that was it. So I suggest instead of giving our lists as a whole and then talking about them for our top spots, I think we should alternate.
Works for me.
Right.
Would you like to go first?
Sure. So I think we'll go over our top fives, but there's some on here that I have to talk about as far as honorable mentions go, because there are some ridiculous cards in this game. The one that got brought up just now in the Small Council Radio Discord chat, I want to begin by talking about Overgrowth. Good God, this card. Good God, this card. I don't understand it. There's some cards in here that give automatic hits. Not like this. Dude, each time this unit is attacked, before resolving that attack, the attacker suffers one hit plus one for each of this defender's remaining ranks. Let me say that again. Now, this is conditional. The unit has to pass a morale test to get this card attached to its unit. But once it's on the unit, every time it's attacked, you have to take up to four hits. This works on melee and ranged. This card is nuts. There are similar cards to this. Night's Watch have one. It's melee only, and it's only for each rank in the unit. This card makes that card look like it should belong in our top or our bottom five list. Wow, this is amazing. Now, it is counteracted by a card that made your bottom five, loved by the small folk. But Overgrowth is insane. What do you think about Overgrowth?
I would easily agree. That card was like one card away from my honorable mentions. Like it literally was the last cut. Because I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I have 7. So I have like 2 honorable mentions and then my top 5. And I believe that Overgrowth was number 8, if I'm not mistaken, on my list. It might even have been ranked higher, but I have been very fortunate. Spencer is the person I play against the most, and he plays Baratheons. And he plays a decent amount of Loras, and I think he's gotten that thing attached once, because he always fails his panic.
Yeah.
So I've been pretty fortunate to not have to be on the receiving end. But having played a lot of, let's say, free folk that do auto hits, and just being even on the receiving end of Gior's lesser hit card, I think it's literally almost the same. It's just only melee, and it's only for every remaining rank, and I hate that card. So I can only imagine one extra, and then even when I try to shoot them. The Overgrowth is insanely strong.
Yeah, if you are running a faction that doesn't have armor, you just can't attack the unit. You just can't, because those hits are going to quickly rack up into wounds. And he's got a pretty strong attachment on top of that. And the Renly side is starting to get fleshed out a little bit more with more units to play with, rather than you were just seeing Loras and Rose Knights and a bunch of slow units around. They don't have to do that anymore. They could pack this card with the new pikemen or the riders, and you're going to get punished even more for attacking the Baratheon units than you already are. Now, I've played against Loras before, and Overgrowth is the card that I would target with Counterplot while I was playing Lannisters. But while you're targeting that card, they have some of the other crazy cards that Baratheons have now. So, yeah, it's tough when you have the prospect of facing down Overgrowth.
All right, so an honorable mention for me. I know this will probably shock a lot of people, because I'm sure a lot of people would put this in their top five somewhere. But so it's an honorable mention for me because it's almost there. It's either six or seven on the list for my top cards. And that would be Counterplot. Counterplot is like the ultimate control card. You're able to use this card to stop your opponent's best cards. But granted, you know, unless you have that crown, I can't tell you how many times I've seen this card fail. with that said, this card is like the key card you need to just counter your opponent's best card or the most problematic card for you with what you're playing. So it almost, like I said, it almost made the top five, and I know a lot of people out there, it would easily be in their top five. What do you think?
Yeah, Counterplot is great when it works. The fact that it's possible for it to not work really sucks. I have had the crown, and I have still failed Counterplot by rolling a one or a two on both rolls. It doesn't feel good. And on top of that, it seems like I wouldn't say that the game is evolving, but there are lists out there where the strategy doesn't rely on their tactics cards. So now you still would like to stop them when they happen, but there are some lists out there that they're entirely relying on their units doing the work, with their tactics cards being a supplement. So in those situations, you can stop a few cards, but it may not really affect your opponent's strategy. But there are definitely cards out there that you need to stop. I mean, we mentioned it, and you know, Overgrowth, Endless Horde. There's an awful lot of cards that you definitely want to stop, and Counterplot's great for that. But it can fail, and yeah, I can see why it didn't make the top five. It's not on my top five.
All right. Do you have any more honorable mentions? If not, I'll mention just my last honorable mention before we move into our top five.
Just for clarification for the audience, Overgrowth was, in fact, one of my top five cards. It wasn't just an honorable mention. But we can talk. Yeah. Just want to make that clear. Overgrowth is nuts, and it's not just an honorable mention. It is a ridiculous mention. Far as honorable mentions go, let's talk about assault orders, namely Gregor Clegane's assault orders, because I think he has the best one. Getting a free charge or a free attack is great by replacing a tactic zone effect, but Gregor's is the best because it doesn't just require the commander's unit to gain the benefit of a free charge. It could be a Clegane unit, which could be from Mountain's Men, or if you're crazy enough to try it, Clegane Brigands, or any unit that you put Sandor in. So being able to get a free charge from assault orders is great. The only other one that I think is capable of doing that is the Stark assault orders, but you have to claim the sword. So it's very conditional as far as the any unit can charge from assault orders benefit. Otherwise, it has to be your commander's unit, which is very limiting. So when I'm thinking about top, this narrowly missed the cut. It's very handy, but there are effects out there. There's more effects now that can deny you targeting a zone ability than there were like last year or the year before. So not only do you have to worry about getting a card blocked, but you also have to worry about not being able to target a unit with a tactic zone. And that could definitely ruin your plans on trying to pull assault orders off.
Yeah, assault orders was definitely very close to making my honorable mentions as well. Any version of it, really. I agree with you about, Gregor's being the top, then probably Stark's, and then, from there down. But I would say even the regular, the ones that like Victarion's, the ones that your commander has to get the charge, I would even put rate those really high. I mean, you know, getting a free attack or charge is huge in this game. And just kind of throw it in there because it's similar-ish. We do not sow. We do not sow may not give you a free charge, but the potential to not only get a free attack, ranged or melee, it has the potential to heal you in return, especially if you are using it on a unit with Fueled by Slaughter. The wound transfer, we'll call it, it can be huge. You know, you could heal upwards of three, one plus one for every destroyed rank. So you could be at last rank and heal three from We Do Not Sow, attack, kill off your opponent, and Fueled by Slaughter will heal you four, putting you back to giving you a total of seven guys back with that card, essentially, between the unit and that card. So I definitely wanted to throw We Do Not Sow kind of lump it in with Assault Orders, because for me it's very comparable.
Yeah, it's a very similar effect.
All right, and then let's see. My next honorable, or my last honorable mention. This one I wanted to put in the top five so bad, but I just couldn't do it because of how situational it can be, depending on how your gaming group plays and how the tournament you're playing is. But that is Holland Reed's Kranig Traps. When an enemy unit activates, if that enemy is in long range of a friendly Kranigman unit, it suffers minus one to move this turn. You know, minus one to their stat, not just total distance. And target one terrain piece until the end of the round. Enemies treat that terrain as having the dangerous keyword. And the potential of this card getting looped with Sansa, you could potentially keep a unit stuck on a terrain piece the entire game. But the problem with that is that sometimes if you're playing random terrain and you get a bunch of, let's say you roll only three pieces and, or you roll a bunch of destructible pieces, because of how it's worded, if you try to attack a destructible piece, that's dangerous. You'll still take the damage once, but it'll go away, and you won't be able to loop this effect. And so that's kind of why I ultimately had to knock it down to sixth place on my list. But this card is, you know, can be game-changing depending on the way the terrain is.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think I was on the show when we were breaking down the new Stark Tactics cards. I love this card. I love Kranigman Traps so much. That possibility that your opponent has to go through this bog in order to get to the objective, but there's a chance that if they end their turn on that bog, the next turn you make that bog dangerous. Oh, I just love the mind games. Yeah, and the mind games that you could play with your opponent with this card is so good. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's probably right on the cusp of being in one of the top five cards in the game. It was not on my list, but now that you mention it, yeah, it's a fun card.
All right, and that's it for my my runner-ups. I just got my five left.
I'll do one more of my honorable mentions, and then if we have time at the end of the show, I might toss some more out there. Let's talk about tactical approach. Stannis' card, he could attach this card to a friendly unit. When it attacks, in addition to whatever damage that their attack can do, this is after rolling attack dice, they can decide to expend a condition token from the unit and deal an additional D3 wounds. If it's Stannis' unit, it deals an automatic 3. What the heck? St- Stannis is out here doing more wounds than Gregor frickin' Clegane. And all he's got to do is spend a weakened token that he doesn't even need on the attack anyway. Good God, I hate seeing this card. This card, if you can attach it to a unit that doesn't have Stannis in it, let's say you attach it to Champions of the Stag, they're always going to have a token available. Whether they're charging, they're going to put a weakened token on you. Or if they're just in melee attack and starting engage, they're putting a vulnerable token on you. And then Stannis plays the token game like it's going out of business. Baratheon in general can throw out a boatload of tokens. And you're just constantly seeing your units just bleed away, getting these tokens spent on them. Now, D3 effects, we were starting to get away from those in the game. They're trying to minimize the amount of effects that rely on the D3. It's kind of nice that this one relies on the D3 because you're really hoping for the one if you're the opponent. But with Stannis, you take that die roll right out of there, automatic three. And if he's hitting you hard with something like, let's say he's in Kingsmen or something, and you're getting a nice sundering attack with full dice, and you might have a vulnerable token on you, and he gets to spend a weakened token just to do an auto three. God, that hurts. Very strong card. It didn't make the top five, but it was definitely worth mentioning. What's your experience with tactical approach?
I know it's not true. I just like to, tongue in cheek say it's true. I invented this card. I made it popular. No, back before it got its slight nerf, because before it was all attacks, not just melee. I was running Stannis in some Bastard's Girls, and I with my luck of drawing, I would draw it like first round every single game, and I'd attach it, and then I'd explode units, and then I'd put my results on like my findings on the main Facebook page, and the very next patch they made, that card went bye-bye or got its slight nerf. So it almost made my list as well, almost made my honorable mentions. The amount of token play that Baratheons have basically fuels this card like no tomorrow. This, just even putting it on Stannis and then putting Stannis in something like Bastard's Girls, who generate their own token, and getting auto three. I mean, you can start of the turn, mark target, and then, because he has mark target, right? And then the swap ability.
Mm-hmm.
So you can mark target on a previous turn. You then, on their turn, can turn it to, like, a weakened token. You then can shoot them, deal some damage, cause a panic test, make them vulnerable, use their charge action after the shot. Now you're charging in. Now you get to expend one of those for three auto wounds since it's Stannis, plus your attack, plus it's vicious. By that point, if your opponent's not dead, they're so close to dead that they're not really doing anything to your Bastard's Girls, and then the very next attack is easily going to kill them, unless they heal, obviously. But, this card is insane. And like you said, you can even put it on other things that generate their own tokens, like Champions of the Stag. But pretty much anything that generates its own token is going to make great use of this card. You could even put this on Queensmen and really give them some damage output, especially if you because you could keep getting justice back, and then after you get attacked, throw all three tokens on them, and then Because they don't have, like, vicious naturally. You can just attack, expend the panic token to do 3 auto wounds, use the vulnerable when they for the saves, and then when they attack you, expend the weakened to soften the blow, use your order, go get justice, throw all 3 back on them, and rinse and repeat. Like, it can get quite silly.
Baratheons are totally balanced. I don't know what the problem is. I can't believe radio hosts get on the air and just talk about how powerful Baratheons is. It's just inconceivable.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that honorable mention. All right, so are we ready to get into the best of the best?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so... I'll start it off. I'm not going to lie. I almost can't even pick. Like, all these cards are so frustratingly strong and annoying. But I will start with one that you sort of already mentioned, and that's Endless Horde for the free folk. This card is giving you a free activation, and though a lot of people, you know, see it and be like, okay, cool, I could bring back one of my great units, and no, seeing this card round 1, round 2, back-to-back, just get yourself 2 free early activations is probably the strongest part about this card. It's not even necessarily the bringing back a dead unit. It's, oh, round 1, all right, very first action of the very first round, another Raider unit that now deployed 2 inches further unactivated than the rest of my army if it was a 10-inch deployment. And then, oh, what do you know? I Craster and or Mance or something to draw more cards because the letter was probably taken since you took the horse. And look, I drew into my next one. All right, start of the next round. They're not expecting 2 endless hordes back to back. I'm going to take the horse again. All right, now I am a 12 activation list instead of 10. Yeah, it's nuts. And I say this not out of frustration of having played against it. I'm the only free folk player in my group. I'm the one doing this. So I am telling you from the person doing it that it is silly.
You monster.
Yes.
Yeah. So Endless Horde is towards the top of my list. In fact, my top 5 tactics cards list is about 12 cards long. So I'm a little flexible. So Endless Horde made my top 5, but I'll definitely talk about 5 cards so we don't end up having too much overlap. Endless Horde in rounds 1 and 2 just give free folk a tremendous advantage by getting more units on the field than normal list building would allow. And other effects that do similar things just have such an opportunity cost behind it. Like I think of Balon Greyjoy's ability to bring a previously destroyed unit back onto the field. You have to spend 5 points of your army to be able to gain that ability. Now you do still get his NCU effects, but there's an opportunity cost to it. You had to lose a unit, give up a victory point to be able to bring it back out on the field. Endless Horde is a tactics card in the base deck that you get to bring a unit out for free, free activation, more field presence, more interaction with the rest of your deck to be able to coordination tactics or regroup and reform with. It is quite the card, and it is definitely worth one of these top spots and best cards in the game.
I would even say one suggestion that we've mulled over in my group is, and I'm not saying this is some perfect fix, but you know it would be a start. It's just changing it to be like all the other factions' attach cards. Literally attach it to a unit, start of the turn, attach it to one of your units, and then when that unit dies, redeploy it, activated, not unactivated. Just it redeploys activated. That way, it's more than likely going to have to be late game when this triggers. You're still going to kind of get that feel for another unit coming back, but it's going to come back activated. It's not adding more activations than you started the game with, and it's going to usually happen mid to late game, depending on what unit you put it on and whatnot. But yeah, as is, it gets silly. I can't tell you how many of the last, like, five games I've played. I want to say three of them I've seen Endless Horde in the first hand. If not the first hand, the second hand. And it gets silly very fast.
Yeah, it sure does. Now, in the spirit of what that card kind of brings, it kind of leads me to one of the cards that's on my list. And it's in the vein of what I call not die mechanics. It's the ability of something that should have died and should have been destroyed, remaining in play, and continuing to force you to invest your precious action economy into destroying. So what is Dead May Never Die? Made my list. Now, it does have a drawback to it in that if you don't control the swords, this unit that is already in a weakened state could start suffering wounds and end up finishing off that unit. But there's a lot of things that can happen after you put this card on the unit. You can heal it up. You could, in fact, have control of the swords and not have to worry about taking those wounds. The action economy in the game is very, very precious. You only have so many activations. You only have so many actions that you can take. And if you have a unit that continues to soak up your enemy's ability to deal with it for much longer than it normally should, your other units out on the field have more freedom to do what they're trying to do, either controlling objectives or getting in ideal positions to be able to counterattack your opponent. Now, we've had effects like this in the past. Jon Snow in 1.6 had a really annoying ability to stay alive if he passed his morale test. And I believe his attachment also had a heal associated with passing that morale test. And it was one of the pariahs in the game. It's like, yeah, Jon Snow, you can never kill him. You can try to kill him, but he ends up coming back. And then the next round, after you had him on one wound remaining, then now he's back at full health. That's not quite what Is Dead May Never Die does, but it's equally as annoying because it's a base card in the Greyjoy's base deck. And they have a lot of abilities to heal units back up and force you to continue to invest beyond your normal resources to finally remove a unit, get your victory point, get that breathing room on the table to be able to continue with whatever your plan was. So that is why What Is Dead May Never Die made my list. What do you think?
I see why, and I agree. To put it in context, it made like my overall pool like of, I think before I started like filtering out, I think I had like 18 cards, which sounds like a lot, but there's a lot of cards in this game. So it made my initial pool, but I would say it was in like the first batch to kind of get taken out. But I think that's a lot to do with I've played as Greyjoy's like countless times, and this card has been a game changer, which is why it made the initial list or the initial pool of cards. But there's been, I can't tell you how many times where I play this card and I just then end up dying to the panic test after because I died from the attack and I still have to then take the panic test. Or just the way things happen, my opponent ends up taking the swords and then now I can't perform any actions or because you have to take the wounds before you perform the action. So that initially, the slight drawbacks is what initially got it cut, but like I said, it was really high up there, so I can definitely see why it it made the list for you. All right, so let's see. Again, some of these are so hard to pick between. So if some are like, why is that one above like Endless Horde or below this one? Just know that it took me long enough just to get the five that I have, let alone decide what order to put them in. So I will start with next one I'll say is Field Control. When an NCU claims a horse, if that NCU is a friendly, you may replace its zoned effect with essentially plus one move to the maneuver or retreat, and enemy you disengage from becomes weakened. Great ability. You know, a nice little decent boost. Cool. So the next part that says if the NCU is an enemy, you may force your opponent to replace that zone's effect with one friendly combat unit becomes weakened. They may shift 3 inches. And my big problem with this card and why it's so strong, in my opinion, is the fact that it replaces a zone after your opponent has already replaced it. You know, if you played Assault Orders, if you take the horse and then play Assault Orders, well, they play Field Control. Guess what? Your Assault Orders goes to the discard pile. And you now have to pick a unit that is going to be weakened and shifting 3 inches. Another one would, you know, think of any replace effect tactics card and or effect. A big one being the new Rob NCU, which allows you to bring a unit on from outflank. You have to declare Rob first, and it's a once per game, and then you field control replacing it, and then you no longer get to bring a unit on, and then now Rob's effect is gone, and your unit that was in outflank can never enter the board because the only way that unit in particular can come on is through Rob's ability. This card, I hate this card so much from a design standpoint, in the sense that I'd be somewhat okay with it if it didn't stop your effect. If it just overrid it. So let's say if I played Assault Orders within, you played this and it just returned my Assault Orders to my hand. Okay. Or, you know, any other effect that replaced that was like a one-time or a tactics card. That'd be a lot more manageable, and it'd still make this card ridiculously strong. But as is, this card is not only annoying, it's just so, like, it stays true to its name. Field Control, you know, it really is a super control-y card.
Yeah, it's been around the block a few times as one of the most hated cards in the game. It's certainly annoying when your opponent can dictate to you what you can do. Now, I'm somewhat triggered by this card because I think I have PTSD from not the card being played on the table, but the arguments in Discord that this card actually doesn't do anything. And it's hard for me to get past those discussions. Their argument is that with simultaneous actions, your opponent will have already done their zone effect by the time that this should trigger. Now, I understand that perspective, but it's almost to the point that this card's existence justifies that it does what it's supposed to do. And it's hard for me to get back into that. I'm cringing just even thinking about those conversations. Let's move past this as soon as possible. Okay, back to the card. The card itself, I think we knew this card was crazy when we first saw it during the 2021 reveal. I think a little bit of the shine has come off of the card. It may just be me. I don't think that it is super uber powerful like it used to be. A lot of people are avoiding bringing effects like Outflank, or I know Rob, NCU ability is relatively new, but I think you would tend to avoid bringing that NCU into a Targaryen matchup because of this. I think the playstyles and list styles have adapted to this card's existence, so it's not quite that hated, fearful card that we're used to. It is still super annoying. And the fact that the effect itself is manageable, that you're basically just becoming weakened, and then you may shift 3 inches. It is your choice on what unit becomes weakened and if that unit shifts or not. But it is the fact that it is taking what you're hoping to accomplish by taking the horse zone and denying you that is the most ruthless part of the card's effect. So I could definitely see it being a top five card in the game. But in my experience, I've actually played 3 games in a row against Targaryens, and I haven't run into trouble facing the card. It could just be luck by me. It could just be avoiding the horse zone altogether. But
that'll definitely help.
Yeah, I haven't had as much trouble in my recent games against Targaryens. That's just me on field control. All right. Next card on my list. This is a new addition in the 2021 Season 1 update, and it is Great John Umber's Berserker Tactics. Good Lord, man. This card got a come up and a half. When a unit is performing a melee attack, if this targets a House Umber unit, the defender becomes panicked. Pretty good. But in addition, you may suffer up to 3 wounds, and if you suffer any wounds, this attack deals +1/+ that many additional wounds. Now, I talked about this earlier in comparison to Price of Failure. This is the exact trade of wounds for wounds, plus an additional wound, and all of this is in addition to your attack that you've already rolled. So if you're looking at Berserkers, if you hit all of your attacks and you're rolling your highest attack die value, let's say you're using Catelyn, you could be hitting with 9 hits and a panic token and take 3 wounds to deal an automatic 4. And they still have those 9 defense saves that they have to worry about. That is insane. That is an amazing power level on a card. You could do that with Tully Cavaliers, who are rolling 10 dice with Sundering. Now, it does hurt a little bit to deal your own unit that costs 8 points, 3 wounds. But an auto 4, and you are in one-shot territory pretty easily.
Especially devastating impact.
Yeah, especially if you have tokens on them. And then there's an interaction with Shaggy Dog that's just nuts. You can end up essentially killing Shaggy Dog to trigger Last Stand to get an additional attack that has his max dice, which is 8 dice, because he will count as having 4 wounds on that Last Stand attack. Mind-blowing, the amount of combinations and the amount of just raw damage that you can do with this card. Now, it is surprising to me that he has not risen as far as stats goes, as far as his ranking and the amount of games that he's winning. Starks in general are still struggling despite their bust that they got in the Season 1 patch, this being one of them. But as far as just what a card can accomplish, what a card can do to your opponent, there's very few cards in the game that have this level of power or level of potential. Now, if you're looking at it mathematically, you're taking 3 wounds to deal 4 wounds. That's only a plus 1 wound in trade. But this is in addition to your attack that you're already rolling. And it like I said, it really increases the one-shot potential that they were trying to get rid of. So they told us in 2021, they're trying to remove the possibility of one-shotting units because it's no fun when that happens. And then we get a card like this. Just a super, super crazy card. What do you think?
I think that this card is on my top 5, and I completely agree. For pretty much all the same exact reasons you just mentioned, Tully Cavaliers with 10 dice on the charge, hitting on 3s with Sundering. You played the Devastating Impact so that they are now vulnerable and panicked, and you play this card to do an auto 4 wounds. Yeah, that more than likely is a dead unit. Just by pure dice, like not even factoring, you know, whether or not they're taking that panic test with a panic token on them. You know, because out of those 10 Sundering with vulnerable, you only then have to do 8 more wounds. Now, granted, you could roll bad on your charge and only get like 8, and if they have, you know, like a 3-up save or something, you know, it could definitely be possible. But I think that's why, you know, you pick your target, you know, with a fast unit like the Tully Cav, you pick your target. And if you can suffer 4 wounds to yourself and just obliterate one of their activations right off the get-go, you know, that could be game-changing, especially if you want to run some healing, either with Eddard NCU, the older version, the healing version, or Tycho to just kind of counteract that, and then pair either of those two with Sansa to just recur this card and just continuously charge and do this combo and then heal back up with either the bags or your NCU of choice that heals. Yeah, it can get pretty insane. And there's so many different things that can do it, or that can make use of this card, especially if your opponent only has, you know, 5 or less wounds. Because remember that in order to do any wounds, they have to suffer a wound, so they have to take a wound, otherwise they won't take any. So this doesn't just Oh, no, sorry. I think I read that wrong. So, yeah, it does the wounds automatically, correct? I'm reading that right.
I think you might be onto something with the card. Let me look at it myself. So if you suffer any wounds, this attack deals 1 plus that many additional wounds. So you do have to at least suffer 1.
What I mean, though, is it says if it suffered. So I'm assuming it's referring to your unit taking up to the 3 wounds, but I think I've had someone in the past try to say that the if it suffered, referring to the enemy suffering wounds from the attack.
That would be incorrect, as the timing for this is after rolling attack dice. Your opponent hasn't even rolled their defense dice yet, so they could not have suffered any wounds. It would have to be referring to the attacker.
I mean, that makes more sense to me. But yeah, so with that said, then I guess they would only have to, if they have 4 or less, you could literally just take off 3 wounds of yourself, and then you don't even care what they roll on their defense dice. Let's say you're more than likely to kill them, but you just want to say, you know what, screw it, I don't care. I just want to make sure that no miracle happens and they just die. Very, very strong card. I think this card, I would argue to say that Greatjohn Umber has probably the 3 strongest tactics cards in the game, like combo, like if you add all the strength of all 3 together, not individually, because Lash Out is one that was very high on my list that almost made my honorable mentions. And then Last Stand is just amazing if you're, you know, running it with like an Umber unit. So all, you know, because it's not often you see a commander who has 3 really good tactics cards and decent commander effects, you know, because I believe he has overrun and the heroism, like the auto six, but you take D3 wounds. So, yeah, I would argue to say that he has a great three, but this one, easy top five for me.
Yeah, it is amazing to me how poorly aggressive commanders perform in the game. It really shows that that it's not all about just mindless aggression in these games, because like you're right. Great John has probably the best suite of tactics cards in the game as far as output. But he's not considered one of the best commanders in the game. He's in a faction that is rated rather poorly right now. And I can't remember where he ranks within faction, but I don't think he's the top. I think he's probably somewhere in the middle. It's just surprising to see. And I guess that throws out that mindset of destroy your enemy, you know, see them driven before you and hear the lamentation of the women. That's not how the game plays. The game plays probably a little bit more of an objective focus. You should be playing the objective and only killing your enemy when the time is most opportune. And I have found myself on multiple occasions failing to follow that strategy. I see my opponent across from me, and I just want to kill him. So I go and charge, and then I get, and then I fail. And like I said in my last game against Baratheons, I throw over 30 dice, and the unit still doesn't die. It's surprising to me that Great John is not rated better than he is. But as far as tactics cards power level, yeah, Berserker Tactics is hard to beat. What was your next one?
Well, right before I jump to that, Great John is currently rated number 50 overall and the fourth highest Stark commander, if you count, because Roos Bolton is in there. But if you don't count Roos, then he's the third highest Stark commander on
stats.
Well,
that's not bad. Yeah, that's not bad at all.
But, all right, so next up for me... I'm going to save probably my most hated for last and hope you don't accidentally say it as your next one. But my next one that I'll mention is There's Too Many. When an enemy is performing a panic test before dice are rolled, that enemy suffers -1 to the roll and +1 wound on failure for each of your friendly units in short range, up to 3. So I pulled this combo in particular off quite frequently, and frequently enough that I'm confident. Like, it's not like some miracle trick hat, you know, like, or hat trick, you know, thing that I need to bank on all these different things, but I run Followers of Bone with a Champion of Bone, which gives them Intimidating Presence, Harma Commander, and then Fainting Maneuver. I then charge my Followers of Bone, Fainting Maneuver to the flank, or if I'm really lucky and I get to from flank to rear, and then I attack, There's Too Many. The modifier is so bad, they auto-fail, and they auto-take, well, assuming you have enough units in range, D3 plus 4 on top of the attack you just did. It almost doesn't matter what you are, you're dead, unless you have, like, a card that brings you back to life or something. This card is so ridiculously strong, and with Free Folk's numbers, you can almost guarantee that it happens. You know, because you can almost always outweigh your opponent and then pull this combo off, and their big star unit is just dead. Because, let's see, it's -3 for the card, -1 for the flank, -2 for the vicious, -1 for the Intimidating Presence. You're looking at least -7. If you're in the rear, that's -8. If you have a corpse pile, that's -8/9, depending on if you're flank or rear. I mean, what the most reliable, best morale in the game is a 4, you know, aside of, you know, running an attachment to make it better. So 4 plus 7 is 11 possible to pass. If you get that 9 plus 4 now makes it impossible. And then, like I said, if you're attacking in the flank with well, and then you can, you know, if you have a Harmo in range, you can do her whatever her ability is, the to give out the tokens if you do an attack in the flank or rear. I believe it's panicked and vulnerable. Ambush. I think that's what it's called. Let me look it up real quick. Harmo. Oh. Superior flanking. When a friendly unit long range performs an attack before rolling attack dice, if the defender is in the flank or rear, the defender becomes panicked and vulnerable. So yeah, and all this requires for setup is to have two particular cards in your hand. There's too many, superior flanking. And even with all that said, you can do this combo pretty reliably just with There's Too Many, the card in question, the one that we're, you know, that I brought up. You know, you can still, let's say it's just a moderately defensive unit, a 6-up morale, and all you have is your followers with the champion and this card, and, you know, getting into the flank is not that hard, depending on how many activations your opponent has. So again, you're looking at 3 for the card, 2 for the vicious, 1 for the flank, 1 for the intimidating presence, making it a minus 7. Well, let's even just say you in the front, that's minus 6, and you're a 6 morale. It means you need cars. You need 2 sixes on your roll. And if you don't, you're taking D3 plus 4. And they have 7 dice hitting on 4s with rerolls if they charged you. This card is just insane. Potential of damage because of the other things that you can combine it with. So I'll end my rant there. What do you think?
All right. So let me put this as concisely and as simply as I can. There's Too Many is not powerful. It's freaking broken. It is a broken card. The only requirement to play There's Too Many is be a Horde faction. Oh, wait. Free Folk is the Horde faction. There you go. There's your condition met. This card works on any panic test. This could be a Crown Zap. And you can get to play this
Supremacy.
Card. It could stack with then Supremacy, and you have the most ridiculous set of negative modifiers to your panic that is possible in this game.
Oh, yeah.
The one thing that I can compare this to is Lannister Supremacy. Lannister Supremacy requires you to make the decision to attack a unit with Lannister Supremacy. That's the first thing. Then you have to have attacked that unit with an attack that doesn't knock off very many ranks. And then you get to receive this as an order, which can be blocked or countered. That's a lot of steps. And Lannister Supremacy still isn't as strong as There's Too Many can be. And There's Too Many is a tactics card, which can be blocked. But as we've discussed throughout this episode, Free Folk have quite a bit of cards that you kind of want to block, including Endless Horde. You can't block them all. So you have to really pick and choose which one that you want to try to block. And like we talked about with Counterplot, you may not even block this card. Your Counterplot could fail, and then you lose the game. It's a rough card.
I'd say the only bane to this card is auto pass panic tech. Test cards, and there's a decent amount of them out there, but they're usually all commander specific.
One of them is what's his face, Eric Ironmaker. commander, and he doesn't get run, so he doesn't count.
Yeah, Eddard, Northern Defiance, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Azor Ahai, is it called Azor Ahai? I know it's the R'hllor. Stannis has one.
I think Jaime's got one too.
Jaime, does Roos have one or Ramsay?
No,
I can't remember.
No, I don't think they have one. No.
No, I think no. Sorry, it's the neutral deck has one.
Oh,
if they're within range
of the
commander,
or worth the risk or something. Yeah.
So yeah, there's a decent of them out there, but like they're usually not tied to a faction. You're looking at, you know, oh, I just happen to have this commander. But even then, you still need the card in your hand. So.
Yeah, it's a crazy card. We're definitely not the only ones that have this one in our top five. It's probably top one. But it's rough. It's rough to see across the table. When it gets played, you're probably losing a unit. If not, it's going to be darn close to dead. So,
I got one
on.
Left. What you got?
Yep. Will. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, no, you can go ahead with yours. I thought you were going to say, oh, yeah, you can mention yours. I was just mentioning. I got one left. So
okay.
Let's hear it. What you got?
All right. So let's go with, this might surprise some people, but I really like the flexibility of this card. It's Eddard Stark's Fury for the Fallen. And we talked about cards that give you free attacks or free charges being strong. They typically require zone replacement, or in the case of Sentinel, for something to be attacked in range, and then you can only charge or attack the unit that did the attacking. But Eddard Stark's Fury for the Fallen is way more flexible. It can perform an attack or a charge on anyone. It doesn't have to be the attacker. It could be
no range too.
No range requirements. It could be just a free attacker charge. And if he's in a strong unit, you're going to get some mileage out of that free attack or charge. And then there's the bonus that if the defender was destroyed, then Eddard Starks get rerolls and on the attack or charge distance dice. That's a nice bonus. Usually you want something to come out of if a unit has been destroyed or not. But in addition, they also have on-death cards like the North Remembers that give some pretty good bonuses for when a unit dies. So this is just gravy. It may not make a lot of players' top five cards in the game list. But for me, that card right there, what you're getting out of that card, just a free attack or charge action as the result of a normal action in the game, just a unit being attacked anywhere on the field. It's just really versatile, really strong to me. It's not quite as strong as some of the ones that we've been talking about. None of these that I have been talking about have been any order at all. This is just stuff that I've written down that I think is strong. Where would you have this card at? Is it anywhere approaching your top cards in the game?
Yes, it is. I would say in my top 10, this card. So, you know, I sort of misspoke earlier when I mentioned, you know, when we were both kind of talking about the assault orders being, honorable mentions. This is in every way better than assault orders, in my opinion, because this is a reaction. You then get to go after you do this card, which could then be take Sansa and pull the card back to your hand. And then your opponent goes, oh, as they realize if they attack you again, you're going to play it again.
Yeah. Yep.
And then, and let's not forget, every time you play this card, you heal two wounds because this card is being played on Eddard. Eddard has Rally Cry, and he's going to heal a unit within long to other than himself, two wounds. So Other than the fact it has to be played on Eddard, it is basically all the best of We Do Not Sow and Assault Orders all wrapped in one, in my opinion. It's a reaction. It's a charge or a attack. It has the potential to get better if the opponent died. You are healing. And, of course, it's in Stark, so Sansa can just keep recurring it over and over. And you could just use your other NCU to take a zone to replace it with Assault Orders, since it's in the base deck, and then just constantly Sansa for Fury for the Fallen. I definitely agree with this card. This card was so close to making, you know, my top that I am not surprised that it's high up for you. All right. So
let's hear your last one.
My last one. This card is, you could arguably say this card is less than some of the other ones I've mentioned on my list. But this one, personally, I hate this card. And to be fair, I play it a decent amount myself with Steyr. But I play against it, as I mentioned, with Spencer, who plays Baratheons. And that is Final Strike. After an enemy completes a melee attack, for each wound the defender suffered, the attacker suffers one hit. In the case of Baratheons, if you control the crown, they suffer -1 to the defense. In the case of Steyr, it's if the defender was within long of Steyr, they get -1 to their defense. Now, some people would argue, okay, well, in order for them to really hit you hard back, you had to have hit them hard. Again, this card, as we're kind of mentioning with Fury for the Fallen, it's a reaction. You know, this card is doing, you know, in order to have taken all that damage, the person had to attack you. They had to use their attack on you. This card just says, okay, take all these hits as a reaction. I'm going to then do some shenanigans if I need to heal, and then now it's my turn. And that's if Final Strike didn't kill you in response. This card, especially, you know, it's, and, you know, as much as I hate playing against Baratheons having this card, it's even worse with Steyr. Now, granted, with Baratheons, it's in their base deck, so everyone but Davos will have it, since Davos swaps out that card. But Steyr, granted, it has to be Steyr. Within long of him, that's a big bubble. And it's a lot more reliable than needing a zone. Not only that, it's a free folk. Oh, I'm going to try to get that 12 wound 4-point raider unit off the table real quick to try to even up the activations a bit. Oh, you just one-shot them? You know, all right, Final Strike for 12 -1. Oh, and you're vulnerable? All right, reroll all those. This card is insane. And like I said, maybe not arguably better than some of the other ones we mentioned, but it's very high up there. And you could say it's situational, but, you know, if you're building your list in a certain way, you're almost planning one unit to just get hit in a way that you can play this card and capitalize on it. And like I said, find some way in Baratheons, find some way to heal. In Free Folk, find some way to make it be your useless raider unit, and then you just explode one of their expensive units. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you here. Now, Final Strike and Baratheon can be annoying. You typically won't have huge, massive swings because, well, you're not going to be doing that many wounds to Baratheons because they're just brick walls. But when you're talking about Free Folk, they want to take their cheap, inexpensive units and trade up with more expensive units than they are. And this helps them do that to an immense degree. If you have your expensive, maybe moderately armored unit and go and they just hit a unit of Raiders or even Trappers. Let's say they're going for a more opportune target that doesn't have insignificant. And they just hit them super hard. A ton of free hits are coming back that could be minus one. And then it's now the free folks' turn to act. And there's a high possibility that that unit that just went on defensive is going to be on the defensive very quickly or destroyed. It is a tough thing to contend with when that's a possibility. And, yeah, I think Final Strike is even stronger in Free Folk than the Final Strike in Baratheons is, and the Final Strike in Baratheon is annoying enough as it is. So, yeah, no argument here.
All right, what's the last one on your list?
Okay. I was thinking about whether I wanted to talk about this one or not. I could almost certainly guarantee that this is not on anyone's top five list. But with the way that the game, I'd say was going there for a while with games lasting into the later rounds more often and games not ending in rounds two or three with multiple units just getting wiped out in a couple of hits. They were heading in a direction where games were going to be more long and grindy. And Battle Endurance ended up popping up on my list, with the reasoning being is you don't have to do anything to get the benefits from the card. You just have to wait. And the benefits stacking and your unit becoming more strong as the game goes really rewards a patient player. You could have yourself one or two absolute dreadnoughts of a unit at the end of the game. And if you play it the right way, that game is going to swing based on what you do with those units. And there's a high likelihood that whatever they're up against isn't going to be able to hang with them. And there's multiple commanders that bring Battle Endurance. I think they're the same across units, just giving benefits of rerolls, sundering, critical blow, additional attack dice. If you're able to put these on units that don't already have most or any of those keywords that they're gaining, and let's say they gain those in addition to keywords that they might already have, like vicious or precision or things like that, Battle Endurance can be a tremendous card. And you can get those benefits even in the late game if you haven't drawn it yet. A lot of the tactics cards that we talked about will only work in certain timings and positions of the game if you've drawn the card. But Battle Endurance, you get that benefit even if you draw it in round six. You haven't been able to enjoy its benefits up until then, but you still get all of the previous round benefits in addition if you did finally draw that card on round six, and now you get to start going to town with all of those keywords turned on. I don't think Battle Endurance is on a lot of players' radar, but for me, for those reasons and those bonuses that you get and the versatility of it, of just being patient and playing a patient game, which I think is more rewarded than playing aggressively in the game right now. That's why it's on my list. What do you think?
I think this is one of those cards, because a handful of commanders have it. It does have a caveat for me. I would say Eldin and Great Walrus, it's pretty good. And like you said, you just kind of, if you're patient, this card can really, show a lot of value. I think where this card can easily make my list is with Grey Worm, because Grey Worm's Battle Endurance applies to all attacks. and now you can be throwing this on Dothraki Outriders. And this is something that Craig from the show does quite often with his he'll run Grey Worm and like two Outriders, and then he'll throw a Battle Endurance on each one, and now they're shooting you with rerolls, eventually getting Sundering and Critical Blow and plus two attack dice all on ranged attacks. It gets quite silly. So I think, you know, it'd be nice to kind of see it, a lot of these like assault orders and battle endurance and these effects just all be streamlined to be the same. It's weird when you got to kind of like really read through and make sure you're not mixing them up, since some of the assault orders will say attack, some will say melee attack, and same with battle endurance. So I would say Grey Worm in particular really drives this card home with its potential.
Yeah, and making these lists was so difficult. I mean, there's still other cards that we didn't get an opportunity to go over. I like Wildling Diplomacy, Predictable Maneuvers, even Issue Commands made my honorable mentions for just the ability of handing out additional charges or attacks to your other units and being able to camp your commander's unit on an objective score and still be able to be offensive with your other units. There's a lot of great cards, and fortunately enough, there's more great cards in the game than there are terrible cards. And I think we showed that with just as many cards that we wanted to talk about here in our favorite cards lists, and just a handful of ones that made our not as favorite cards list.
Yep. I'd agree with all the three that you just mentioned, and I'll throw a couple out that, I wanted to add. I know it's when one of your units die, or when you kill one of your opponent's units, but the amount of wounds and the swing and killing something and then taking their attachment for a total of 5 wounds back after you've both fought like a grueling battle and now you know you're healed up and all that. And I'll just throw a big group of them out there. All of the tactics cards that give you an extra victory point when you've completed what it needs you to do, those can swing games if you get really good at triggering those ones. But with that said, we are running down to the last couple minutes. Want to have enough time for our outro. You know, I hope you all enjoyed the show. You know, the top and bottom cards. I hope it kind of gave you an idea of what to expect if you're kind of still a newer player experimenting with some of the combos and some of the cool things you can do. You know, I want to thank you, Cyrus, for coming on and doing this this show with me.
Yeah, I was happy to do it. Conversations like this and show topics like this are a lot of fun to break down instead of when you have, you know, a single host that just wants to complain about a particular faction and is all woe is me and how terrible the game is. That's really not how the game is. The game is actually full of a lot of fun stuff, a lot of fun interactions that you can play with, that you can learn. And, yeah, this was a good topic, and there's more topics to discuss that are similar to this that we'll probably get into in future episodes.
Awesome. All right. Quick shout out. Remember, this weekend, Indianapolis and at Family Time Games, and there's, I believe, a Tennessee qualifier, so go check those out. With that said, this is the Small Counts Radio, and it is dismissed.
Still here. Why?